Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're consuming this broadcast. Welcome to Bus Talk. I'm your host, Ayan, and I am going to walk you through your everyday at work. Now, that sounds very long. Now, but we pick up some regular conversations from everyday at work and see if it makes sense. Can we simplify it? Can we break it down? Net of it, what is the story? You know, at Bus Talk, we try and answer questions that you thought were taboo, or sometimes ask the questions but never got the answers. And so if this is something that floats your boat, then you are on the right show. As always, we'll reflect back on the week gone by and pick a topic and see if we can cut the clutter from there and bring it to you in simple terms. In this year, in season 5, for those who haven't heard previous seasons, I'd strongly recommend you go to www.bustalk.in, bustalk.in, where you can get to hear or catch up with some of the previous year's content. In this year, I have a theme for each month. And in January, the theme is building a robust team. So we started with strategies for hiring top sales talent, followed it with onboarding and best practices for hiring and onboarding and developing the talent that you've just identified and hired. Then we spoke a little bit about incentives structure for sales performance. This is largely on the backdrop of sales and business development. And today we are going to talk about integrating technology in sales processes. But before I jump into that, let me give you a sneak peek of what to expect in the next month or February. It is already February. I'm running an episode late, so my apologies. But in February, we have 4 episodes, and the general theme is around LinkedIn, the mastery for interacting, engaging, primarily for sales folks, but also for folks outside of sales. So it could be finance, marketing, any other tech or any other B2B tech environment. And I'm guessing you engage with LinkedIn very frequently. So there'll be 4 subtopics each week where I talk about the ways to build a powerful LinkedIn profile, to networking strategies, to figuring out LinkedIn analytics and drive discussions. And of course, what could be the strategies, content strategies for a better engagement. Again, these are broad topics. There'll be a lot of subtopics in this, and we'll touch upon a whole bunch of things. Essentially, by the time you exit February, you will have a slightly better way to look at LinkedIn and engage with LinkedIn. And if you're already an expert, good on you. But I come across many people who are still a work in progress. So a lot of this content is for such people. So stay tuned. But coming back to this episode, I am going to talk about integrating technology into sales processes. What's working, what's not, what's the future? How will automation impact salespeople? And then, of course, the processes. Remember the time when people asked you to update the CRM? How many times you've not done that? How many times have you gamed the CRM? How many times you've entered incorrect data? How many times you've struggled to create a dashboard? And more importantly, give you a great anecdote. Back in the day when there was a situation, people had a heavy reliance on their own Excel sheet. And no disrespect to Excel sheet, but I'm saying when there are 65 million of them floating around, you as a sales leader find it kind of difficult to shepherd everyone into one single sheet and wish they would follow the CRM. It's like you can take a horse to the well, but you can't make him drink. So it's pretty much the same with sales folks. You keep saying update your CRM, update the CRM, and whatever. There's a bunch of CRMs, right? But one of the most common ones is, of course, SFDC. But I'm sure there are many other people who use very different sales CRMs. You just do not update the darn data. And then in many cases, the sales ops teams then infer with whatever data is given, and it calls for a very difficult discussion post that. I'm sure many of you have gone through that. And so then people come up when put under the pump, they come up with their Excel sheets. Like, hey, look at my Excel sheet. I've got all the deals. I've got all the data here. It's like, dude, why is there a CRM? Why are we paying for that license? Why is it that you don't see sense in updating the CRM? The prompt answer is, well, it's a time-consuming activity. It is so administrative. It reduces my customer-facing time. And there are so many other excuses. The net of the story is people, most salespeople do not like updating CRM. They'd love to get information from the CRM, but not update it to the CRM. And that's the challenge. But the solution, therefore, I mean, what is the solution? Many people try out many things, including incentivizing and or the flip side being penalizing. So if you did not update your ops or op interaction, op as an opportunity, interaction on the CRM, then you do not get paid part of your KRA. So you would have, you know, say three parts to your KRAs. One is, say, absolute revenue. One could be activities, and one could be manager's business objective. And so in that, you allocate a weightage, say 10% or 15%. And does that pinch a lot? It's like the parallel cricketing analogy is like when people in a cricket match have slow over rates, they're bowling slowly, they get penalized some 10% of their match fee. But then if they go on to win the match and get the MVP or whatever, then the 10% doesn't really pinch. You know what I'm saying? And so is the same analogy for putting it in the KRAs and KPIs and say, okay, you'll lose 10% or 5%. Because they also know that you cannot be in a situation, or a salesperson cannot be in a situation where updating CRM has, say, a 50% weightage. That would be a game changer, wouldn't it? But that ain't happening. So if that's not happening, then it's going to be around 5%, 10%. And so many people make peace with it and say, hey, I'll get that big deal. And yes, it's still a loss of money. But yeah, there is this resistance. Oh my God, this is so administrative. Why can't we hire a couple of interns to do this? Why can't we hire a couple of people, a sales ops kind of person? Many organizations can't afford one, don't have one, or wouldn't want to have one. Because if you are an account owner, then you own it end to end. And updating it on CRM is part of it. So why shy away from it? Anywho, that's the whole point of the impact of technology. People would love to use technology, but also then you see the dichotomy that they don't want to adapt it as much. They'd rather use it selectively. And so I'll touch upon a few points in this conversation and see if you resonate with it. And if you do, then ideas to make you think, what are you doing about it? For those who've not been long around in the sales evolution, sales cycle evolution, or sales engagement evolution, this is a little reference to context. When originally, I'm not putting any timelines or date, just think of it as like way back or long time back. The way it all started was you had something which you wanted to sell. So you opened the shop and waited where someone else would come in and explore and be curious. And if you liked the stuff, you picked it up and in exchange for barter or money or whatever. That's a very simplistic sales example. Now, fast forward a few hundred years, it became a little more aggressive where you needed to display and make it more attractive, make it more shiny so that more people came in and more it got the attention of more people. Then it began to depend on relationships. How much do you know the person? Did the product deliver what it promised? Was there enough support that you extended even after the sale? Then fast forward a few more years, we went into the stage where it was this hard outbound where relationships and equations and historical knowledge, the superstar culture, the superstar salesperson arrived at the scene. Like, they were the movers and shakers. They almost hunted in packs. So they and their fan following moved into an organization along with them. They got their previous customers to jump ship as well. And so they were valued very highly. All of that began to change with the advent of technology and internet and the availability of information easily, and more importantly, freely available information. That many more websites came out. So the exclusivity that a salesperson held owing to past equations, past deals, information about an account, the region, territory, geography, whatever, went slowly away. And it then became redundant because the same was easily available on online. It was available on their company website or the wherever that company belonged to, whichever vertical. So for example, if it was a pharma company, you could easily search the medical or the pharma vertical, healthcare vertical is the word I was looking for. And you would have found that company and similar companies. And so you get to be a little more informed. So you see what happened is around 2007-08, it was like the app world that got, that changed the economy. I mean, with the advent of internet itself, whole lot of things changed. Like folks who sold in the 90s would agree that selling in the 2000s was vastly different. And then clearly those who sold in the 80s, they probably couldn't even identify what the hell is going on. But to keep it near term, folks who sold in the early 2000s, the pre-app era, they were largely still had a hangover of the 90s with a lot of equations and the hard outbound push and get. There were many customers who were not completely tech savvy despite being in tech positions and everything. And so licensing became that much more complex and people landed up selling more than what the customer needed. Almost 60-70% of the customers had overpaid for licenses, or in other words, had no usage or less usage of whatever that they had purchased. Now, all that began to change with the advent of sophistication of technology and modernism and information awareness. And so the grip, the control that the salesperson had on the customer increasingly decreased. I know that is an oxymoron, but yeah, it reduced is what I'm trying to say from what they had, say, in the early 2000s. Now, post 2010, with the app economy firmly settled in one place, then the customer itself was more informed than what they were, say, 10 years earlier. So when you in a classical sales cycle, the customer would be, say, around 20% ready at around, say, in the 2000s or 90s. But if you spoke to the same customer in 2010 or 2012, they would be at least 40% already figured out stuff. In 2024, I'd probably stick my neck out and say they're almost like 60% sure, informed, aware, researched on where they want to go, what they want to buy, who they want to engage. So what does it do to the salesperson? It compresses the utility of the salesperson. And so what it does to the sales cycle is it is pushing it back to inbound from the erstwhile hard outbound. Go out there, talk to customer, build on references and referrals, equations, personal relationships, build trust and get sale done. To now, you are a vendor, it's the customer saying, you are a vendor to offer something. I have some place to go from point A to point B. So if that stuff does not add value, I don't really care about what previous relationship you bring. Of course, you have to still build trust that yes, your product might fit, but I don't trust you. So those things remain constant. You have to still visit and talk to them and win over their trust, and not by nice, sweet nothings or good words or a working lunch, but trust from the value of the product aiding the journey of the customer. So where do they want to go? If I'm a customer, I want to go from point A to point B. That's my charter, my goal. And I'm trying to see which of these three vendors helps me get there the fastest, the smartest, the most cost effective, and of course, which is very secure. So what this does is the salesperson is now compressed and has to augment their levels of engagement. Earlier, it could have just been talking about features and benefits, and now it's like, let's get in, double click on that. What is the security layer? What is the return of investment? What happens if you start to de-support? And the customers have that many more questions because they've seen that many more examples pan out, sometimes favorably and sometimes unfavorably in some of their known circles. So then the salesperson now alone cannot go out there and meet the customer. They have to now rely on the sales team. And the sales team could have a technical specialist, could have an architecture level specialist, could have a vertical specialist. And so the sales team grows. If the size of the sales team grows, innovates good. That's not that one man show or one woman show. It is a team sport, but it also makes a lot of overlays. You see how all these things are connected. There's just too many overlays, and overlays are always susceptible to the non-revenue generating resources are always, you know, not the best friends of finance. In the sense that, okay, what's the impact and stuff like that. And so to minimize that human cost, sometimes you then start to rely, and as has happened, to rely on automation for decision, data-driven decision-making to increase efficiency and productivity. For example, automation streamlines routine tasks, enabling salespeople to focus on the best return of investment, like high-value activities, versus doing tactical activities. Now, those tactical, say, data entry roles was a industry in itself. It still exists, but it is largely reduced, and to the best of my knowledge, perhaps doesn't have a very long future ahead. In the sense, data entry has now become so much automated, pre-fed into the apps, into the systems, that entire set of people who were previously gainfully employed trying to do enter data, cleanse data in the system, they will slowly find themselves in a different role. They will have to augment their skill sets and do something different. As was the case, if you must have heard this multiple times on Buzz Talk, typing. Yeah, typing used to be a job. You know, typists, the speed of typing, the accuracy of typing, you know, there were typing institutes and everything. Today, none of them exist, not to my knowledge, at least. And so the same thing. So the automation is squeezing, compressing the salesperson into becoming a more efficient and more laser sharp in the piece that they probably control, which automation is yet to catch up. Wow, that was a lot of carefully constructed sentence, but you get the drift, right? To simplify this, till such time automation figures out or AI figures out that human element, the classical salesperson will probably continue to thrive. There are many customers now who understand technology, especially the subscription economy, so well. They say, well, I don't really need to talk to you. You know, all you need to do is, I know which services to switch on, which to switch off. If there is a seasonality to it, I can manage it. If there isn't one, that's fine too. And so largely the customers themselves are becoming more informed and aware, as have we. So the society itself is becoming that much more automated without even us being cognizant of it. You know, it almost happens so organically. It seems it's so gradual, but rapid changes happened. Even if you look at the previous 10 years, think of the payments that we used to do via cash, via whatever. Now everything is done through automated payments, UPI, for those who don't know. And so there's a lot of technology that is impacting the salesperson. And so if I had to just point out where is it impacting the salesperson, let's first talk about efficiency and productivity. So it streamlines it increases velocity, you know, the three V's, volume, velocity, and variety. Because of automation and technology and IT, AI kicking in, I think people are now getting to do more number of tasks in the same available time. Your task per hour has gone up. You know, you're doing that many more. And perhaps, dare I say, you are doing that much more relevant tasks per hour than what you did 10 years ago. Think about it. So if this is good, what is the challenge? The challenge is the learning curve. As salespeople have to continually adapt to new tools. And when you go through this new adoption, then there is a dip in productivity. There's a temporary dip in productivity. There's resistance. People also realize that it's slipping away. It's like you're trying to hold on to sand on your palm, right? It slips away between your fingers. So now you go back and think that you are being so resistant to understanding SFDC or any of the other CRMs. And it's not sponsored by SFDC, just so the disclaimer, you know, is because, you know, one is little familiar with the CRM. There have been incredibly painful experiences where salespeople have been so reluctant to adopt this CRM. And it just continues to, I mean, there have been so many fields that are blank. You just fill in the contact information and sometimes the activity and the customer status, but rarely update it, right? So then you think that if you're already reluctant to using what has been there for at least the preceding 20 years, then if there is something new that comes in, how quickly will you adopt it, adapt it? That's one thing that many customers think while purchasing another new CRM, for example. Will the team respond favorably? And so to solve this problem, what's happening is, because this has been persistent for a very long time, to solve this problem, AI says, okay, then let me do it for you. Now, the moment that reality kicks in, well, you don't need to do this. AI will show you the buyer's intent. AI will give you the content, will update the stuff for you. Then suddenly you realize your role has further shrunk as a salesperson, right? The activity part of it. And so the flip side is you are then becoming a little more unidimensional, if that's the right way I can put it, that your only thing is to go out there and talk to more customers. Now, what if that also gets automated with intelligent AI? AI is intelligent, okay. AI ML kicks in, makes it sound that much more real, human-like, and a customer is not able to figure out if it's a human or a bot or something. Then what do you do? What does the salesperson do? Right, so efficiency and productivity are good. Are we heading in that direction? I think so, we are heading. So what does the salesperson do is a question that I have to think. I do not have instant answers to it. But if everything, every part of your sales is automated, then clearly you will have to elevate yourself into something different. You probably have to get into pre-sales. Now, is that too far away from automation? Perhaps not, but there will be let me rephrase that. The pre-sales people who are largely known as the techies, if the pre-sales people figure out the way relationships are built and understand the sales dimensions, then chances are the classical salesperson who was very good at selling, but perhaps reasonably good or not as good as that pre-sales person in articulating technology will have a tough competition. So the pre-sales people stand a better chance becoming mainstream salespeople than the classical sales person. You know what I'm saying? So the flip side is the sales guy will need to then, instead of talking level 100, will have to then talk about level 200, level 300 of their product, service, technology, whatever. That is not everyone's cup of tea. And so you will see a lot of people move away from sales, perhaps into Other areas could be areas like business development, could be marketing. And you could argue, what's the big difference between business development and sales? Well, one is quota carrying and one is demand generating. Demand generating, can that be automated? I guess it can, but it's again not as crazy as or as fast as automation is hitting the sales process as it is hitting, say, the classical business development. Marketing, again, has been automated a lot with all the reports and the dashboards and all the graphs and everything, campaigns and campaign managers and giving you analytics and everything. So this is a transitory phase. If I were to like zoom out and tell you, where are we? We are at our transitory phase for the next 4 or 5 years. And I think by the time we get to 2030, which is less than 6 years now, is when you will at least have some element, and I'm just trying to be a little more specific here, that in the sales cycle, right? So now let's give that as an analogy. From 1 to 10, 1 is finding an opportunity and 10 is closing an opportunity. Closing as in winning the customer. So if there are 10 stages in a sales cycle, my sense is automation by 2030 will claim at least till 5 or 6. The last 3 parts or last 2 parts, you know, maybe stage 8, 9, 10 is the only space that I see will be insulated from automation for a little more, for a little longer. What I mean by that is, and why is that? It's nothing to do with technology or the customer. It is to do with where the customer is in the diffusion curve. If there are these late majority laggards, I'm talking about those customers, the early adopters and early majority will almost do away with, and this is a bold prediction there, do away with engaging with sales. Yeah, that's where it is headed to. But the late majority and laggards, and why they will still be relevant, is because they are yet to play the catch-up game. And so you will see increasingly salespeople be engaging with these category of customers who are the late majorities and who are yet to figure out stuff. And so selling by that design will become a little more difficult, while on the other hand, sales will become a function of high velocity, close more, but with less human intervention. And when you're dealing with late majority and laggards, your selling approach and style and time investment will also become very different. So the organization might prune salespeople down and say, okay, I don't need a 30-member sales team. I probably just need a 10-member sales team, which will slowly, gradually manage, nurture, coach, coax, govern these late majority into early majority. And it'll be the way to measure them will be a little different because it'll take that much more time. And so they will probably even get paid lesser because there aren't any instant returns. Right? So that's where I see it heading in the next 6 years. And post that, there will come a time when the late majority as a entity, as a accumulated, consolidated number of entities, will reduce at least by 50%, because the technology itself will become so compounding that you will start to feel isolated as a late majority, whereas the early majority has expanded into the outer limits, have eaten into the late majority. And so laggards will probably run out of business in most likelihood, but the late majority, which is still a sizable chunk, visualize it as a pyramid. So late majority is the bottom of the pyramid, and early adopters are at the top of the pyramid. And so early majority is in the center. So my sense is this early majority will broaden the band and eat up the late majority, or the late majority will move into, it's almost like alleviating poverty line coming up the Garibi Rekha. And so, no disrespect, right? Every organization runs at its own pace. But that's where we are from a intervention of technology, intervention of automation that we stand as of today. And so if you are a salesperson listening to this, I would imagine that you have to start developing additional skill sets. And for the immediate time being, please update your CRM, get used to automation, and learn a new area of sales. Become a subject matter expert on a product, on a vertical, on a technology, or become something which will last at least 5-6 years. I mean, I would look beyond that before automation hits it. Now, of course, beta test it with its automation ability. What I mean to say by that is, the stuff that you're doing, is it repetitive in nature? If the answer is yes, then there is a 90% chance it will get automated less than equal to 6 months, 6 years. Sorry, I hope it's not 6 months. So in 6 years, it is highly likely to get automated if you are doing repetitive tasks, which are predictable, which can be programmed and stuff like that, which do not perhaps need a human intelligence. It is just a binary yes, no, true, false kind of thing. And so then you have to figure out, what is it that I do differently? And that you can't start thinking in 2028 or 2029. It's a thing that you've got to start thinking now, because there is no one pill that fits all and solves all problem. Each of you will have different pills, right? For some, the red pill will work. Some will have to find some other color pill and get to your reality, get to your new world or new truth as early as possible. I know this is not probably sounding all that positive. Idea is not to sugarcoat stuff, right? Idea is to be as realistic as possible, and whole idea is not to spook you out or make you worry beyond a point. The idea is to equip you with common sense and information to the best of my knowledge and ability, and see, given the time that you have in hand, can you do something about it rather than do a crisis management later on? So think about it. Let me know your thoughts. Let me know your objections, or if you have any ideas that, like, hey, we could go here. And I'm perfectly happy to be proven wrong. And you say, no, none of this is going to happen. We are just, it hasn't changed in the past and it won't. And there are a lot of people who say that. We survived, right, as a sales tribe. We survived the 1900s. We survived the third industrial revolution. We survived the fourth industrial. We are in the fourth industrial, and probably if there is a fifth one, then we will survive there as well. We may not be selling the same thing in the same way. We might be selling something different in a different way. Now, I take exception to the fact that I think even if you look at it very philosophically, it might sound a little management-y here. Sales as a profession also is going through a bell curve, and it is reaching that tip of the bell curve where it starts to decline. And decline in the sense, not that sales has become bad, but the fact that automation has become good, and so you don't really need to sell, and it's more, and the relationships and equations are still there, but customer wants to be better informed than trust you with what you're saying. They want to verify it. It has to be evidence-based, neutral, and beneficial to the customer over a period of time. So those factors make me believe that in the next 5-6 years, we got to make the most of it. Some will see the impact a little earlier, say United States, or the developed economies. And the developing economies, I don't know if we can call India, a large part of India is developing economy, and some part of India is a developed economy. So the developing economies might get maybe a 2 or 3 year more. So you're talking about 2033, 2034. But clearly in 10 years, this is not what we are going to be dealing with for sure. And I'll end by saying that, go back 10 years, 2014, we were in a very different shape, size, form. If you go back further 10 years, that's 2004, it was absolutely a different space selling wise. So by that analogy, I think by 2034, we'll be in a very different space. So gear up, brace up, don't fear it. And start thinking as a salesperson, whether you are an early career, mid career, or if you're a senior career in the sense, if you're in your 20th year or above, clearly you have a lot to think about that. How are you going to lead such a sales team in the next 5, 7, 10 years or a business function? On that note, I think it got me thinking as I was speaking with you guys. I made some points and I was just thinking myself, but I'm going to think about it. And if something comes up, I will share with you. If you want to share, you know where to reach me. I'm available on ionisms@gmail.com. You can reach me on X, formerly Twitter, hashtag ionisms. That's AAYANISMS. Or you can leave a voice message, answer the poll question. And if you are so kind, leave a review on the Apple podcast page. So you can go search Buzz Talk on Apple Podcasts, scroll down, you will see write a review. And as always, bouquets and brickbats welcome. I'm happy to change, improve, rethink whatever that we share. It's never a etched in stone kind of thing. So I hope you get that by now. And do share with those who care. So until we meet the next time, stay well, stay safe, keep listening to Buzz Talk. This is your host, Ayan, wishing you a great week ahead. Ciao.